Chapter 39.
Two sugars and easy on the milk, said Hadley.
He was sitting at the kitchen table while Sally made the tea. Tim was also sitting at the table, clearly uncomfortable at the way Hadley was treating her like a maid, but Sally didn't object. She was actually grateful to have something to do. The kettle boiled and switched itself off. She poured water into three mugs and dropped in Tetley tea bags. She knew without asking that Tim liked his tea milky and without sugar. Sally always preferred hers black.
How were they able to track my phone? Asked Sally.
It's doable these days, and not just by the authorities, said Hadley.
But how did they have my number? And how did they know where I lived?
She turned around to look at him.
It all happened so quickly. They were in the house. I ran and managed to find someone to hide me for half an hour or so while I called an Uber. I'm sure they didn't see me getting into the car, and I'd changed my appearance. But somehow they managed to intercept me by the common. How could they do that?
As you said, they must have been able to track your phone. It's easy enough these days, now that they all have GPS.
But that doesn't explain how they knew my number in the first place, does it?
Hadley shrugged, but didn't say anything.
And they knew where I lived. That means they know who I am.
I suppose so, said Hadley.
He shifted uncomfortably on his chair.
There's no suppose so about it, said Sally. It seems to me that there are two possibilities. Either they knew who I was before they went into the house, or they found out after they saw me. And either way, they must have had help from someone at Tim's house.
Are you pointing the finger at me? Asked Hadley.
Sally shook her head. I'll admit earlier on today I wondered if you were involved, but now it looks as if they were after details of this safe house. And as you obviously knew about the house, you could have just told them, right?
You thought I was a traitor, a mole.
Ian, someone must have given them my name, address, and phone number.
It could have been a friend, he nodded at Tim, or a boyfriend.
What the fuck? Said Tim. What the fuck are you saying?
She's making allegations about the service. I'm simply pointing out that the information could have come from elsewhere.
He held up a hand.
Having said that, there was a GPS request put in to your service provider regarding your number earlier this morning.
Sally's jaw dropped.
Are you serious?
We haven't been able to ascertain who placed the request, and at present we have no way of knowing why the information was sought.
Ian, will you listen to yourself? It's as clear as the nose on your face what went down.
They went looking for the details of this safe house, and when they realized I had the thumb drive, they got someone at Tim's house to get my location.
Hadley opened his mouth to reply, but before he could say anything, the kitchen window exploded, and his face erupted into a red pulp. He slumped across the table, blood splattering across the floor. Sally turned to look at the window. There was a man standing outside wearing a black ski mask. He was holding a carbine, a big black weapon with a large silencer on the end of the barrel. She stared at him in horror. Tim was already on his feet, backing away from the table. There were more loud bangs from the front of the house, then more shots, louder this time. The man at the window was moving now, bringing his gun to bear on Tim. Sally began to scream. She grabbed the kettle, took two steps across the kitchen, and hurled it at the masked figure. He saw it coming and started to raise the gun to block it, but he was too slow, and it hit him in the face. He screamed as the boiling water splashed over his head and chest. Sally ran towards the door. Tim opened his mouth to shout at her, but she was already committed. The man in the mask was screaming in pain now. He dropped his gun and reached for his mask. Sally suddenly realized that the back door was almost certainly locked. She switched her attention to the window, where the man in the mask was still howling in agony.
Sally, no!
Shouted Tim. But it was just background noise. Adrenaline had taken over, and she was in full fight or flight mode. The shot had smashed most of the glass from the window. She vaulted onto the worktop and jumped out. The man was clawing at his ski mask, trying to get it off his face. She twisted in midair and smashed her shoulder into his chest, and he staggered back, his arms flailing, his screams turning into curses. Sally bent down quickly and grabbed the gun. There was a second man in the garden, she realized, bigger than the first, and also carrying a weapon. The man she'd scalded was in front of her, so the other attacker couldn't get a clear shot. She had no idea what sort of gun she was holding, but the man had fired it, so the safety must have been in the off position. She slipped her finger over the trigger. Her heart was pounding, but her mind was sharply focused. The second attacker was moving to the side. He was also wearing a ski mask. Sally held the gun steady with her left hand. The man she'd scolded managed to get his mask off, but before he could react, she kicked him in the stomach, putting all her weight behind the blow. He staggered back, his wet mask in his right hand, his left flailing out for balance. She pulled the trigger and was surprised how little recoil there was. The bullet smacked into the middle of his chest and he gasped. The man behind him was still trying to get a clear shot. Sally kept moving, bending low to make herself a small target. The man she'd shot was still on his feet, and there was no blood on his chest. He was wearing a bulky black vest over his jacket, and she realized it must be bulletproof. He took a step towards her, and she shot him again, this time in the throat. Blood spurted over his body, but he remained upright. She darted to the right and got a clear view of the second man's face. She aimed and fired, but the shot went wide. She fired again, and this time she managed to hit him, but only in the shoulder. He too was wearing a bulletproof vest, and she wasn't sure if the shot had wounded him or not. "Bitch!" the man shouted. He swung his gun around, but she ducked to the left, and when he fired a short burst, most of the rounds hit his colleague, who was slumping to his knees. Sally was down in a crouch now, and she aimed upwards and fired three times. The first two missed, but the third caught him in the centre of his face, and he fell backwards. Sally straightened up. "Sally!" She turned to see Tim staring at her, wide-eyed. "What the fuck?" She bent down and picked up the gun of the second man she'd shot, then jogged over to the kitchen window. She passed the carbine to him.
"I'm not trained in firearms," he said.
"Neither am I," she said. "You just point and pull the trigger." He stared at the gun in his hand.
"Are you serious?"
"It's for self-defense, Tim." They heard more shots from the front of the house. Sally headed to the driveway. Tim called her name, but she had already blotted him out. As she turned around the corner, she saw a black Outlander in the road. There were two more bangs from inside the house. She hurried along the driveway. There was a man sitting in the driving seat of the Outlander. The streetlights were reflecting off the windscreen, so she couldn't see his face, or if he was looking in her direction. She raised her carbine. She had no idea how many shots she had fired or how many rounds were in the magazine. She put the stock against her shoulder and took aim at the passenger side window. She pulled the trigger, and a round thudded into the car door. The engine of the SUV roared, and she fired again. This time, the passenger window shattered into 1,000 cubes. The Outlander pulled away from the curb, accelerated, and sped off down the road. Sally moved to the front of the house. There was a second Outlander parked on the other side of the road. Sally raised the carbine again and shot at the rear tire. The bullet ricocheted off the pavement and she fired again. This time, the rear window of the SUV disintegrated and it also sped off down the street, the tires squealing on the tarmac. She heard more gunshots from inside and ran to the front door. It was ajar and she pushed it open with her foot as she kept the gun up against her shoulder. There were more bangs that sounded like suppressed fire and cracks from unsilenced handguns. As she pushed the door open, she saw a man in black at the foot of the stairs. He had his back to her, and he was aiming his silenced carbine at the upper floor. He was wearing a helmet and a bulletproof vest, and under other circumstances, she would have assumed he was a specialist firearms officer with the Met. The man fired twice, and his bullet smacked into the wall at the top of the stairs. Another man was in the hallway, heading towards the kitchen. A figure emerged from the sitting room. It was one of the DEA agents, the Hispanic one. He was holding a handgun and he fired twice. Both shots hit the man at the bottom of the stairs in the face, and he slammed against the wall and then slid down it. The man in the hallway turned and was swinging his gun towards the DEA agent. Sally fired twice, and both shots hit the man in the chest. He took a step backwards, but then started moving forward again. She fired again and hit him in the face, and he slumped to the floor. The agent stepped into the hallway and aimed his gun at Sally. "It's me!" she shouted, holding her gun in the air. "Don't shoot!" He looked at her coldly and nodded. Tim appeared in the kitchen doorway and the agent swung his gun around. "No!" shouted Sally. "He's with me!"
"I can see that," growled the American. "I'm not stupid. Where did you get the guns from?"
"Two guys attacked us through the kitchen."
"And you overpowered them? What the fuck?"
"I had a kettle."
"A what?"
"I threw a kettle of water over one of them and grabbed his gun." She shrugged. "Looking back, it wasn't the smartest thing to have done."
"It worked," said Tim.
The agent waved for them to be quiet, then shouted up the stairs.
"Eric, we're all clear down here."
A large man with a crew cut and a square jaw moved cautiously across the upper landing.
"Sit rep,"
he shouted.
"Two dead in the hallway,"
came the reply. The agent looked at Sally.
"The guys you took the guns from?"
"Dead. Both of them, in the back garden." Eric came slowly down the stairs. He was holding a large semi-automatic.
"We've got two bad guys dead upstairs, so that's six in total."
"There were two vehicles outside, black Mitsubishi Outlanders," said Sally. "I fired at them and they drove off." He frowned at her.
"Who are you?"
"Sally Page."
"She's the girl who didn't get killed in Wimbledon," said the other American. "Where's Harris?"
"Dead. He took a bullet when they burst in."
"Who's Harris?" asked Sally.
"One of your bosses," said Eric. "Toby Harris. He was running the operation that captured Flores."
"Is Flores the cartel guy?"
Eric smiled thinly. "Yes, the cartel guy. Harris was our MI5 linkman."
"All academic now that he's dead," said the other agent. "What about the other MI5 guy that turned up? Hadley?"
"He's dead," said Sally. "They shot him in the kitchen. They came through the back garden."
"And you killed them?"
Eric peered through the front door and then closed it.
"This is one hell of a clusterfuck."
Eric noticed Tim for the first time.
"Who the fuck are you?"
"Detective Sergeant Tim Reed," he said. He nodded at Sally.
"I'm with her."
Eric nodded.
"Right. To bring you up to speed, Detective Sergeant Tim Reed, I'm Eric Mitchell, and this is Louis Mendoza, and we're with the DEA. Upstairs, I've got one more guy, Sam Butler, who's guarding our prisoner. Two of my men are dead up there, and Harris."
He looked over at Mendoza.
"Jim and Larry bought it."
"Shit," said Mendoza.
Eric grimaced.
"They caught us by surprise up there. It was a fucking massacre."
He frowned.
"Where's Rick?" "I'm sorry, Eric. He got hit when they burst in. He managed to get back into the room but bled out."
"Fuck,"
said Eric.
"So we're down to three of us, plus Sally and Tim makes five."
"How did Harris die?" asked Sally.
"He was in the room with Flores. First guy in started spraying bullets and took out Harris and my two guys. He was about to shoot Flores when I got him. And the guy who was with him, I got them both. But it was touch and go."
"I thought they wanted to rescue Flores," said Tim. Eric shook his head.
"They came here to kill him," he said.
"But Flores is all right?" asked Sally.
"My men stepped in front of him," said Eric.
He looked at his watch, a bulky black G-Shock.
"The plane won't be here for another 6 or 7 hours.
He looked over at Mendoza.
"Got any thoughts?"
"If two of them got away, they could well come back."
"That's what I was thinking. And we're going to have to ask ourselves how they fucking found us."
"Yeah,"
said his colleague.
"It can't be a coincidence that they turned up on Hadley's heels."
"He knew where the safe house was and probably knew that you guys were using it," said Sally. "He could have just told them. They wouldn't have had to kill everyone in Wimbledon or chase me across London." Eric cocked his head on one side.
"So what are you saying? They followed him?"
"That seems more logical," said Sally.
She's right,
said Mendoza. But I think that the killers have an inside man at Tem's house, said Sally.
Tem's house?
Queried Eric. That's where MI5 is based, said Sally. Someone did a check on my phone this morning, and it's possible that the same person tipped off the killers that Ian was heading out to see me. He wouldn't have been expecting a tail, obviously. Eric grimaced.
Like I said, it's a clusterfuck.
He looked over at Mendoza.
We're going to have to saddle up and ride out, because they're not going to give up.
Agreed,
said Mendoza.
But where?
Eric gestured at Sally with his chin. Do you have any bright ideas? There's Tim's flat in Maida Vale. Five don't know about him.
How far away?
15-20 minutes. You'd have to park on the street, though.
Any other possibilities?
What about checking into a hotel?
I'd be worried about involving civilians if they attack again, said Eric. Plus, it might arouse suspicion if a group of men check in together with no luggage, especially with one of them in handcuffs.
We also don't know who's involved, said Mendoza. If the cartel has a mole inside MI5, then they might well have access to credit card information and hotel records. We need to take care of this ourselves.
Agreed, said Eric.
He looked at Sally. Any other thoughts?
I have the keys to a flat in Notting Hill.
Is it safe? Asked Eric. He looked at his watch again, clearly worried about the time.
It's not a safe house. It's a flat used by undercover officers.
Would Hadley have known about it?
Sally nodded.
How many other people at MI5 would know about it?
Asked Eric. Difficult to say, but not many. Eric nodded at Mendoza.
What do you think?
We need to get the hell out of Dodge. That's what I think.
I hear you.
He looked back at Sally.
Okay, Notting Hill it is. You'll have to come with us. From now on, you're our MI5 liaison.
Sally opened her mouth to protest, but he cut her off with a wave of his hand.
We don't have time to argue.
I'm coming with you, said Tim.
Eric smiled thinly.
From the way you're holding that gun, I'm not sure you'll be much use to us, buddy.
Tim grinned.
You just point and pull the trigger, right?
Eric grinned back.
Just make sure you don't point it at me, he said.
Okay, we're on board. He turned to Mendoza.
What do you think? One vehicle? Two?
There's six of us. We're gonna need two. We'll take one of the SUVs, and Sally can lead the way in the car that Harris was using. I'll get the keys.
He nodded at Eric.
Let's get ready to move out.
Eric went to the bottom of the stairs.
Coming up,
he shouted. He jogged upstairs. Tim walked over to Sally, letting the barrel of his gun swing towards the floor.
Are you okay?
He asked.
I've been better. How did you learn to do that? You were on fire.
It was instinctive, she said.
They'd killed Ian, and I knew we'd be next. You were amazing. Me, I just froze. It's like my feet were rooted to the floor.
It happens, said Mendoza.
You have to be trained to overcome the freezing reflex. It's crazy the British cops aren't armed.
We have armed cops, said Tim, but they're specially trained and they specifically volunteer for it. Most British cops wouldn't want to carry a gun.
He gestured at the Glock that Mendoza was holding.
Speaking of which, how do DEA agents get authorization to carry guns in London?
Bearing in mind this gun saved your life, you might not want to be looking that particular gift horse in the mouth.
Sally figured it would be a good time to change the subject.
You're flying Flores out, right? From which airport?
RAF Northolt, said Mendoza, if it all goes to plan.
Sally frowned.
What's that, a military base?
It's a Royal Air Force airport in South Ruislip, said Tim. It's about 8 miles from Heathrow. It handles a lot of private civilian flights, as well as RAF traffic. And a lot of the Russian oligarchs land there in their private jets.
He looked at Mendoza.
Why not go straight there?
The airport is having technical problems, and there is a chance the flight will be diverted, said Mendoza. We're waiting until we know for sure that it'll be landing.
And what's the plan once you get him to the States?
Mendoza grinned.
After what's happened tonight, I don't think there'll be any problem getting Flores to give evidence against the cartel. But even if he refuses, your people have more than enough evidence to put him away forever.
Eric reappeared at the top of the stairs, his gun in his hand. Louis, check we're good to go outside. Sally, you can drive Harris's car. We'll follow. I'll drive and Sam will ride shotgun, so Tim, you sit in the back with Louis and Flores.
I don't have the authority to get involved with a DEA operation, said Tim. He held up the carbine. And I most definitely don't have the authorization to be carrying this.
Eric came down the stairs.
Tim, the president himself has declared Carlos Martinez and his cartel a priority target. He'll smooth out any problems, trust me. But I take your point about the gun. It's maybe more than you need.
He took the carbine from him and gave him the Glock.
The principle's the same, he said. Point and shoot.
Tim, come with me and check out the street, said Mendoza.
Tim looked at Sally. Are you okay with this?
We've come this far, she said. We might as well follow it through.
To the bitter end, she laughed.
Who is the pessimist?
She patted him on the shoulder.
It'll be fine.
Tim grinned, but she could see the concern in his eyes. He followed Mendoza out of the front door. Two more men appeared at the top of the stairs. One was black, wearing a leather jacket and pale blue jeans. The other was Hispanic, with his wrists zip-tied in front of him.
The good-looking guy is Sam Butler. He's with me, said Eric. The other guy is the one they were after.
What the fuck is going on?
Shouted Flores. He was in his 40s, dark-skinned with glossy black hair and piercing brown eyes. He was wearing a white jacket over a tight blue t-shirt, and there was a large gold medallion hanging from a thick gold chain around his neck.
We're keeping you alive, that's what's going on, snapped Eric.
He pointed a finger at the man. And if you don't keep a civil tongue in your head, I'll put the bag back on.
How did they find us?
Asked Flores, lowering his voice.
You said this was a safe house.
He nodded at the body at the foot of the stairs.
How is this fucking safe?
The house was compromised, but you're alive. So just be grateful for that, said Eric.
Three of my men weren't so lucky.
Flores nodded.
The men with me, they died bravely, he said.
Their job was to protect you, said Eric, and that's what they did.
I'm sorry for your loss. I know they were your friends.
They were, yes.
Were they married?
Eric frowned.
Why would you ask that?
They weren't wearing wedding rings, but I got the impression they had family back in the States.
Jim Henderson is married with two young kids.
He grimaced and corrected himself.
Was married. The older guy, Larry, was divorced. His kids are at college. He was due to retire next year. They were both good men.
I'm sorry, said Flores. When this is over, I would like to help their families.
What?
Said Eric.
They saved my life. The least I can do is to help those they left behind.
Eric's eyes widened in disbelief. He opened his mouth to respond, but was interrupted by the return of Mendoza and Tim.
We're good to go, said Mendoza.
Eric handed Sally the keys to Harris's car.
Stay below the speed limit, obviously, he said. Keep it nice and calm. Watch out for traffic lights. We don't want to get caught with a red light while you carry on your sweet way.
What's the parking situation near the flat?
This time of night, it's fine.
Great. Let's go. Mendoza and Tim went back out. Sally followed them. Eric and Butler took Flores through the door. Butler went over to the gates and pulled them open, while Eric put Flores into the back of one of the Ford Explorers.
What do I do with this? Sally asked Eric, holding up her carbine.
Keep it close by, said Eric. Sally nodded and got into the front of the VW. She closed the door and put the weapon in the passenger footwell. She started the engine. Eric got into the driving seat of the Explorer. Tim and Mendoza were in the back, either side of Flores. Sally edged out of the driveway and onto the road. The Explorer followed. Once the two cars were out of the driveway, Butler closed the gates, then jogged over to get into the front passenger seat next to Eric. Sally realized she was gripping the steering wheel so tightly that her knuckles had whitened. She took a deep breath and clenched and unclenched her hands.
Come on, relax. We're only going for a drive, she said.
She checked in her mirror that Eric was ready to go, then eased her foot down on the accelerator.